This is The Thirsty Developer, episode number 21 for May 6th, 2008, starting up on .NET. Welcome, everyone, to The Thirsty Developer. I'm Dave Voss, and over there is my good friend Larry Clarkin. Hello, Larry. How are you doing today?
Doing great, Dave. How are you?
Great. So once again, Thirsty Developer is all about having, you know, sharing the conversations that both Larry and I have with the people that we meet and the jobs that we do as evangelists for Microsoft. And today we're actually going to be talking to a group of folks from a startup company in downtown Chicago, talk to them about, you know, starting their business and utilizing .NET as their foundation for their business. And Larry had a chance to sit down and interview with them last week and discuss kind of the steps that they went through regarding that. But before we get into that interview, actually, there's one thing I want to point out, Larry, is you know, a few weeks ago I had an opportunity to talk with Jeff Atwood of CoordinateHorror.com. And since then, you know, during that interview when we had the discussion, is Jeff was kind of alluding to this next step in his phase of his career. And, you know, he used to, you know, work for Vertigo Software out of San Francisco. And, you know, he kind of announced on his blog that he was leaving. And, you know, Jeff has kind of become popular in kind of the technical community through his blog, Coding Horror. And, you know, he announced that he was leaving, and he was kind of alluding to what he was going to do, but he didn't really announce what exactly he was going to be doing. But since then, he's actually come out and posted what his next steps were.
Yeah, he's actually going to do a website with Joel Spolsky of Joel on Software, right?
Right. So I guess the idea is, yeah, he's teaming up with Joel Spolsky, and the idea is to kind of create, from my understanding, sort of this community for technology-minded people. It's almost kind of a community site where people can come together, share ideas, share thoughts, work together to kind of solve different technology problems. And it's not just specifically focused on whether it's .NET or whether it's PHP or whether it's Adobe or, you know, any. It's open to all technology communities. And the name of their company is that's the first, you know, the first thing they came across, their first challenge they came across is solving, is coming up with a name, right, the important name. So it's actually kind of funny because Jeff put on his blog, he came up with kind of a list of names that are kind of have a geek context to them, if you will. And he put a list of names out there and had everybody vote and kind of select what they thought was the best name and also the best URL for this website. And they ended up coming up with StackOverflow.com, which I think is a brilliant name.
Yeah, I'm surprised that one wasn't registered already.
Yeah, I think he went through and just, you know, registered a whole bunch of these websites and kind of threw it out there and see what stuck. But so they came up with StackOverflow.com. But what's actually pretty cool, what they're doing is, you know, the site itself is not ready yet. They're currently working on that. But what they are doing is they're kind of recording their weekly phone calls or planning sessions that they're having, and they're throwing those up online as podcasts. So if you actually go to StackOverflow.com, there's actually a link there that links to the blog and then also links to the podcast that they're having. But it's kind of interesting just to kind of hear the conversations between Jeff and Joel and kind of the things that they're talking about, the ideas that are thrown around this particular website. But I'm actually really interested to see what comes out of this and see what this website entails. I think it's something that's needed. It's a gathering place for all technical communities to kind of come and share ideas. And it's going to be kind of interesting to see what it all entails.
You know, Dave, and I don't think it's a coincidence that we had Jeff Atwood on The Thirsty Developer. And then a couple weeks later, he came up with the idea of putting out a podcast. I think maybe you inspired him.
Maybe. Jeff did make a funny remark that he says he does like listening to the sound of his own voice. So maybe that has something to do with it. But I think he was saying that in a jokingly way. If you know Jeff and his humor, that's the way it comes across.
Yeah, that's Jeff.
But yep, that is definitely Jeff. He's a great guy. So like I said, I'm really interested and intrigued to see what they make of this website. So so good luck to them. And with that, I think let's lead into this week's interview.
Yeah, Dave, last week I was down at Canopy Financial in downtown Chicago and had a chance to talk with a couple of their architects and their VP of software development and one of their program managers down there. And I really wanted to talk to them. You've been down there to Canopy before. They invited Wade Wegner, who's our colleague here in the Midwest District, and I down to talk about Silverlight and .NET 3.5 and all that. I wanted to talk to them because they're a startup company that's adopted Microsoft technology, which is a little different than kind of conventional wisdom. The thought is that as a startup, you should save money and go with, you know, open source like Linux or PHP, you know, running Apache and MySQL. And they're a very successful startup company. They've been doing it, you know, a little over 2 years now, and they use entirely Microsoft stack.
Right. So it's kind of interesting to kind of see what they went through and the decisions they made and why they made them, you know, working as a startup and why they chose Microsoft technologies. So let's roll that interview.
Hi, this is Larry Clark, and I'm downtown Chicago with the guys from Canopy Financial. Can you guys go ahead and introduce yourself, Dimitri?
Absolutely. My name is Dimitri Maltaniotis. Some would call me a lead architect here, but I prefer the title just a programmer.
Hi, my name is Demi Quiñones. I'm also a lead architect, but pretty much dabble on everything. Have no problem coding.
My name is Todd Rudin, Vice President of Technology for Canopy Financial.
This is Mo Yunus, and I joined Canopy approximately 2 years ago. I joined as a developer, and now I manage the developers.
Yeah, so we were out this morning, and we were having a bit of a conversation about .NET 3.5 and Silverlight and all that. And one of the things that I think is interesting is that, you know, you guys are, you know, kind of a startup company. And I think it's a lot different than, you know, the startups from years ago. You know, when I walked in your offices, you guys didn't have the Serenity Fountain and the, you know, the marble floors and all that. Matter of fact, your floors right now are currently not even carpeted, right? They're concrete?
Yes, it's just bare finished concrete. And that's actually an interesting point. Our company actually started in our boss's basement. It was four of us crammed in this basement coding to try and get the initial version of our application just out there, and then we've been moving up since then, moving into larger and larger offices, and here we are downtown now, and we've almost occupied the entire floor.
Dimitri, tell me what Canopy Financial does.
We are a financial services company. We provide a key turn solution for businesses to launch their own health savings account website platform. So if somebody comes to us and says, we would like to offer HSAs to our employees or to our employers, we provide a solution for them to do that relatively quickly.
Yeah, and because we have an international audience, real quickly, just so that, you know, some of the listeners who are outside the United States, because HSA is definitely a United States type thing.
Sure.
You know, it's basically a savings account that you can use to pay for the, you know, the part of your insurance coverage that's not provided by your insurance plan, right?
Absolutely. It's somewhat similar to an FSA, if you've ever heard of a flexible spending account. But the main difference is with an HSA is that you actually get to keep the funds at the end of the year. It's your money. It's not the employer's money. You don't lose it or anything like that. So a lot of the standard sort of savings account rules apply to an HSA. It's much closer to a savings or checking account than it is an FSA or HRA.
Cool. So one of the reasons I wanted to get you guys on a podcast, and again, we're out here talking about some of the technologies this morning, and you know, it's kind of rare that we see a startup company kind of adopt Microsoft technologies. You know, I mean, a lot of them, you know, the kind of general, you know, thought is that, well, I should go with some open source stuff because it's, you know, it's lower cost. So that's one of the things I wanted to dive into. But I want to ask you, Dimitri, since you've been you know, with the company, you know, since the basement days, did you guys always pick Microsoft technologies, or?
Yes, actually, that was sort of one of the requirements from our boss right out the gate, is that we were a 100% Microsoft shop. Few of the reasons for that is mainly just the unbelievable support that we get from Microsoft. Also, a lot of the opportunities, the MSDN was also a big hit. The developer tools, things like that. We've actually worked together in the past. We've had a lot of experience with Microsoft. We've done some non-Microsoft things. Generally wanted to keep everything very consistent. We've had a very good turnout with that.
So what are some of the Microsoft technology you guys use? Demi, you gonna?
Yes. Actually, I just wanted to make a comment. We actually started off with the 2.0 framework, because as we were formulating what we were going to do and how we were going to approach building our platform, 2.0 came out. And so we actually went together to a Microsoft event, the launch event here in McCormick Place. And we literally started our business from the free version of Visual Studio 2005 and SQL Server 2005 that we received at that event.
The one that came in the launch kit.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. We just actually had a you know, we just are in our current, you know, latest launch. We've done, you know, two since then, and we're still giving out in the latest one, we're giving out SQL Server 2008, Visual Studio 2008, and Windows Server 2008. So that's kind of cool. That's a good story. I'm sure our launch guys will love to hear that. So, but which Microsoft technologies are you guys using right now?
We're using actually the 3.5 framework, .NET framework, ASP.NET. We're using SQL Server 2005. We are currently in the process of migrating all of our production servers to Windows Server 2008. We have seen vast improvements in the load times of our pages due to IIS 7. We have not changed one line of code for IIS 7, but just the fact that it's running on it and in classic mode, we've seen pages drop like load times in half. I mean, it's just that much faster.
Okay, so you guys are using the latest version of Visual Studio, latest version of the framework. You know, you guys are migrating to the latest operating system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, wow, that's really cool. And SQL Server 2008, you got that on the kind of the roadmap?
We're looking at it. We're just waiting for the actual release so that we can go ahead and deploy that here in our development environment. And as soon as we are comfortable with it and it passes our QA process, we're going to migrate to it. I mean, we've heard so many great things about SQL Server 2008. And just today, you know, learning about the entity framework and how it integrates with 2008, that's something that I know that we're going to be able to take advantage of in future projects, if not our main product that we're using right now.
So a lot of the reasons you guys picked Microsoft technology was because that's what you knew, and you had some free copies of the software, you know, in hand, courtesy of our launch event. As you guys were developing your first application, you looked at deployment, you know, of course that's something you got to consider as, you know, and I'll go ahead and just ask, you know, what about the cost? Because that's the biggest criticism from a startup standpoint is that the Microsoft servers cost money and Linux servers are free and, you know, MySQL, you know, is it open source and there's a free version of that. There's also paid versions of it. But, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
I think the biggest deal with us was cost in terms of time is worth more to us than money itself. And, you know, Dimitri can back me up. We literally developed the first version of our platform in 21 days. I mean, that's from zero to having a full beta version that our first client was actually using live. So that kind of development time, you can't – none of us here were comfortable doing that with, like, a different platform since we had already started working with .NET in our previous jobs. We just knew that was the best route for us to go.
Yeah, I'd add to that when they started up, as Demi said earlier, they were given kind of the directive from the founder to kind of go down the Microsoft route. And if you think about our business, since we are a service provider of health savings accounts, the administration platform for that, you have to take a look at our constituents, our clients. And our clients are of three types. They're either financial institutions, healthcare companies, or third-party administrators. Well, if you look at those and think about the industries they're in, you know, I don't think it would have been very easy day one to come out of the gate with an open-source tool. I mean, we had to gain some respect from our constituent clients on what we were building upon. And you know, .NET and the Windows platform is proven and is known. So from a security and risk standpoint, they were better off, and I say they because I wasn't here when they started initially. They were better off starting that way and getting that instant credibility from the large institutions when they were audited, because we've been through many audits with these large financial institutions that come in and they send their audit teams in to do ethical hacks and all kinds of different audit tests against us. And I think it just gave them and us now some instant credibility with those large firms that are out there using our product.
Yeah, given the sector that you're in, you're probably in the perfect storm between, you know, Graham Leach and Bylevy, HIPAA, and probably even PCI compliance thrown in there at some point too, right?
Oh yeah, we truly are. I mean, and that's you know, we're challenged with that daily, and we're actually currently going through PCI compliance right now. And that's something that I know everyone in this room has kind of been involved in those projects. So we do get in that mix, and it is kind of a storm right now because you really don't you know, the ownership of these accounts and who they're, you know, who they're owned by, whether it's a financial institution or the healthcare company. You know, there's kind of that battle going on. That battleground is out there today. And
you guys are probably right on the battleground.
We're right in the middle of that. We're right in that perfect niche to provide them a solution that gets them to market and gets either, whether it's a healthcare company or a financial institution, out on the street immediately with a product. And I know we can put up an out-of-the-box instance of our product for a customer within about 30 days, 30 to 60 days. It depends on how much customization they do. And that really gets into to the decision that Demi was talking about with going with .NET 2.0 out of the gate. And that was, again, based on our clients. Our clients were going to want some branding and theming that was customized to them.
And Master Pages jumps right to mind.
Ran right into that, and that was the decision they made at that point is, hey, we can take advantage of Master Pages and theming and go right into this, and even though we're a hosted solution, provide that customized branding and theming on a per-client basis. So I think that it was really a wise move by them to choose the tools they chose at the you know, out of the gate, so they could get to market as fast as possible and provide the valuable solution that we provide today.
Yeah. So one of the other things is, and you know, Demi, you kind of mentioned it earlier that, you know, you guys have gone through definitely an upgrade on the Windows Server platform. You're looking at the SQL Server one. You've gone through a Visual Studio, you know, and a .NET framework version. You know, what kind of pains did you guys feel with that? You know, and that's a loaded question because I think I know your answer. You know, we've tried to make, you know, all those migrations as painless as possible. But I want to hear your good, bad, and ugly.
I'm going to be very honest with you. From my recollection, we've only had one issue where migrating the project from 2005 to 2008, from the 2.0 framework to 3.5 framework, we had one incident with a third-party control where the person that was supposed to make sure that we had the latest components clicked on the wrong link, and so we were actually using the wrong version. And, you know, it was causing all kinds of crazy problems, and we were worried that we weren't going to be able to make our next release. And, you know, we just decided to check one more time and make sure we were using the most up-to-date version. And it just so happened that we weren't using the most up-to-date version. As soon as we dropped that in, everything worked. So, I mean, literally, it was a piece of cake to migrate.
Yeah, and that's important is that, you know, to note is that, you know, our, you know, the Microsoft platform is a real ecosystem. There's a lot of stuff that's, you know, generated by Microsoft. And I can even point to two things internally where we haven't, you know, yet released the tools around Moss and BizTalk 2006 R2. You know, we're getting there. We definitely, you know, are aware of the fact that all of our partners have to, you know, upgrade their tools, particularly if you're using a third-party control, which I'm a big fan of. Why, you know, if the Microsoft tool control doesn't do it for you, pay a few bucks, you know, for a development license, you know, and get a tool that does. You know, Dimitri, do you have anything to share about that?
Yeah, actually, just to briefly add to that, I can remember one experience where we've been using ASP.NET Ajax since before it was Atlas, before it was even out, you know, for RTM. It was still super beta, and we already had it deployed in production. I remember having actually to go in and fix JavaScript in the framework to get everything to work the way we wanted to. And in the later, when we upgraded to 3.5, I remember that was the only really case where we ran into issues because 3.5 would modify the web configs to add all its own Atlas stuff, and it did a pretty good job of trying to redirect the old assembly versions to the new assembly versions and things like that. But there was an instance where we ran into issues where there were references to the old Atlas stuff and the original 1.06 ASP .NET Ajax stuff that conflicted with the 3.5 stuff.
Yeah.
But I mean, once we got rid of those old references, you know, every migration we've done has been fairly smooth.
Yeah. When I'm talking to customers, if they're already using ASP.NET Ajax on top of the 2.0 framework, I like to point out that if you go to 3.5, mm-hmm. a lot of those references you can remove. Most of them just work.
Right.
But why have an extra reference, you know, around cluttering your web config? Because in 10 years we won't know what that is, and we'll be afraid to remove it. You know.
Right.
So Todd, I had a question to you. You talked about your three different types of customers, and you know, you listed off, you know, banks, insurance companies, third party administrators, and all. And you talked about how the, you know, there was a real advantage in the fact that, well, we use Microsoft software and, you know, it's, you know, tried and true in a lot of cases. At the same time, when you were mentioning all those different entities, the first thing I thought of was interoperability, right? Because every one of those, you know, a lot of banks and financial services companies, you know, insurance companies, all that, a lot of them do use Microsoft technologies, but predominantly, or I wouldn't say predominantly, most of the time, they run a mixed environment where they run mainframes in the background, they run WebSphere, they run, you know, .NET, you know.
Yeah, we have all those.
Yeah,
we're dealing with that on a daily basis, and we are currently, today, we have a consultant in that's helping us look into going towards the BizTalk route. We didn't do that out of the gate because of the skill. We just didn't have the skill set in-house.
Right.
And, you know, BizTalk is a fairly niche skill set to have as it is. And to find somebody that could come in to help us out and get us ramped up was key, especially in our current implementation. I mean, we're at this moment working on a client implementation where we're going to do BizTalk with the MQ series adapter to them. They're running IBM WebSphere or IBM MQ series on their side. But we wanted to stay true to when it came up, I came to the client wanted us to get IBM MQ series.
Right.
And you know, my instant reaction, I come out of consulting and just IT in general, but my instant reaction was, we don't really want to have another product in house to maintain that none of us really know, and I don't want to go pay for, you know, 10 or 12 grand for a product that is going to be used for one customer, and we probably can't take advantage of it in any other way. So, you know, I came to Demi and said, you know, is there a way to connect, you know, with this, with, you know, can we keep Microsoft in house? Because that's where our sweet spot is. That's where all of our skills are at. And I think we went back and forth, and we've been fortunate to have a local consulting firm that's helped us out a lot and with that. And I think today we're in a better position with that to hook up that client going to BizTalk with the MQ series adapter in it. Now, to your point and back to your original question, you know, do we face the issues with interoperability? And the answer is yeah. And we what we do with that, and I'll let Dimitri touch on some of this, but a lot of it is today is just, you know, we're doing flat files back and forth, whether it's fixed width, comma delimited,
right,
you know, with you know, secure FTP or PGP encrypted files, and we're just picking those up and writing our own automation tools to pick those up and process. That, as we all know, becomes a maintenance nightmare. And whether or not those processes are alive, you know, whether that, you know, they have the heartbeat to do that all the time is, you know, kind of gets to us. And we could, and we will look at, now that once we have BizTalk in-house, to see if we can go that route and take some of it through the BizTalk tools. Whether that's the right approach or not, we don't know yet. We're just starting to investigate that. So,
yeah, as you start scaling out with custom integrations like that, the first one, I call it the one plus N problem. You know, the first one is like, wow, yeah, I can write, you know, to your custom file format, no problem. The next guy doesn't have the same custom file format. And then all of a sudden, you know, you do three or four of them, and then you think, wait, I need to put an abstraction layer in here. And
yeah,
as we know, if we talked about this on the Thirsty Developer before, is each additional layer of abstraction is a good thing, but it comes at a cost.
Yeah, and that's one of the struggles we've found as a small company is that, you know, we have gone out there and we've done just that. We've gone out and said, yeah, we'll take your file and we'll take it in and process it. And exactly that scenario has come up. The next guy's a little different. The next guy's a little different. Today, now that we've kind of grown out of startup mode and we're maturing, you know, now that we're 3 years old and, you know, kind of really turned into a teenager here, we are getting more of a client base where we have enough backing now to start pushing back and saying, no, we're going to have our own, you know, interface, and you're going to talk to that. Before, we, you know, it's a struggle because you're a small company. You want the business, right? So
right,
you're going to go out and do whatever it takes to get the, you know, the it going and get and process their files because you want the accounts on the system. But today we are looking and we are going to be pushing out more of that. You know, here's our integration layer, if you will, and this is what you need to talk to us. This is what our API looks like. But that's just starting as we're talking to our customers. I just left a meeting a little while ago, and we had a discussion very similar to that. But, you know, this large client wants to do this, and it's like, well, that's fine, but we need to take it in a certain way, and that's just going to be our rule going forward. If they want to integrate with us, they're going to have to do development on their side to talk to our interface. So,
and chances are large companies, you know how to integrate with other companies.
Absolutely.
You know,
yep, absolutely.
And I always thought, you know, the best thing is the best documented specification about here's how to communicate with us always wins.
Sure.
You know, if you're able to drop that, you know, this great API list and it's documented well and you look like you have your act together,
yeah,
chances are people will go, well, yeah, I can do that, you know. Yeah, this looks easy.
And
right?
We're learning that. I mean, we're getting there. And that's one of the transitions we're going through right now. So,
yeah. So I got an interesting question. You talk about how you go from, you know, being, you know, in the startup mode to now you're in like the teenage mode.
Yeah.
Is it still as much fun as when you guys were in the basement?
Well,
Dimitri, maybe that's a question
I'll have to
hand
it off to Dimitri for that.
The environment has definitely changed. I would say it's the fun is still there. It hasn't gone away. We still work crazy hours because we love what we do, not because, you know, there's somebody, you know, whipping a whip against our back saying this has to get done. Some of the excitement is gone, but there's so much new stuff coming out, and because we are continually upgrading. We're constantly looking at new technologies. I mean, we can't wait for SQL Server 2008. All that stuff that keeps coming just keeps us on our toes.
I got to think that, you know, some of the quote fun that you talk about being over mm-hmm. is probably, you know, comes with a lot of stress of, are we going to get enough customers to stay in business? And,
right. There was definitely a lot of stress early on.
You guys still look like you have a lot of fun. There's, you know, of course, it being a podcast, you guys, you know, won't be able to see their offices, but they have two drum kits from Rock Band set up in the office.
Right.
You know, most companies only have one. You know, you guys have twice the fun.
We do. I mean, we do put in a lot of hours. We love what we do. We love the company. Microsoft definitely helps out with that. I love coding, you know, for Microsoft or using Microsoft technologies. But by the same token, I'm glad that we're not working the 100-hour work weeks that we were doing before. Me and Demi put in a few of those, and while they were not fun, they do definitely give us some bragging rights. But that was...
You've earned your stripes, right?
Yeah, you could say that. That was when we were doing our 21-day implementation from nothing to a savings account website. But we've definitely matured. We don't have to work as many hours. We still do, but it's still good. I still have a lot of fun.
Todd?
Yeah, I mean, I would add to that. I mean, when I started, I was the seventh or eighth employee, and Demi and Dimitri had been here, obviously, a year or more than I had, than me. And I would say the fun is still here. I mean, I think we've done a lot of changing over the last, year. Just we've gone from, I was roughly the eighth person in December of 06, and we're over 40 now, and, you know, it's April of 08. So our staff has grown immensely, but we still have... like Dimitri said, we still have a lot of fun. I mean, we work hard, play hard. The people, we have a team now that I think we're a core team of development staff that, you know, they truly care about their job. They come in, they work hard. They do. And I think that's been a key for us being a successful small company is that I don't think we've just hired anybody. We have a kind of our own unique hiring methodology where the first interview, the person comes in and they're just kind of a cultural fit, you know, interview. The second interview is just a 1.5-hour test. Demi and Dimitri.
Is this a la Joel on software kind of test, you know, and get them to write code?
It's a case study. A basic case study they put together, and you put them in a room for 1.5 hours, let them code just like they work here, full access to the books, the web, whatever, and let them code. And then the technical team goes in and does a tech interview with them and asks them questions about why they made certain decisions. It's not an exercise in finishing. It's an exercise in how do you manage time, how do you think, how do you solve problems, and how do you handle the stress and the time management of that hour and a half. And then after that, these guys will either give the thumb up or thumb down, and we move forward with them. So, but it's been a key because we've had hundreds and hundreds of candidates come in, but we still only have a staff of like 11 or 12 developers because you've got to have that mix in this environment to be successful. And fortunately, we found a group of people that put in the effort and the hours, and you know, You don't have to micromanage them because they do their jobs. They care. You know, they care at the end of the day. They love their jobs.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I've always thought that there's three types of people in relation to startups. There's the people that shouldn't work for startups. I'm not saying they can't, but, you know, it's just not in their makeup. It's not something they want to do. There's the people that can work for startups, and then finally there's the people that can start a startup, you know, because it's one thing to be employee two and three and, you know, to be there, but, you know, to mortgage your house or, you know, put all that money in your credit card for the first month or whatever, that's a different type of fortitude. I've always tried to figure out, you know, am I number two or number three? You know, maybe I should take your test, right, guys? I may be number one.
Just wanted to add to your comment. So I was the first employee here, and the second employee was Dimitri. So everyone after Dimitri has had to live up to his standard. And the guys make fun of me because I come off very, what's the word that I'm looking
direct,
for?
Direct, intimidating.
They say intimidating. I say up front. When it comes to these interviews, because A, we don't want to waste a person's time, and we're just so limited in the time to market that we have for all of our solutions for our clients that, you know, if we were in some other line of business or some other company, a lot of the interviewees that we had, we would have hired and had been able to teach them and grow them.
Yeah.
But we just don't have that kind of luxury of time. So I always look for a person that they might not be skilled in that area, but they have a drive to learn really fast. You know, it's kind of like an intuitive nature that person has that says, okay, I don't know the exact syntax, but logically I understand what I have to do. And I'm just going to have to figure out how I need to translate that into a computer language.
And this ties right back to what you were talking about, you know, why you guys picked the Microsoft platform, right, is that the time is worth more than the money to you, right? Yeah. You know, and finding the right guy who can come in, you know, hit the ground running, but more importantly, be that cultural fit for you.
Yeah, and I would agree. I mean, the folks that come in here having C# as our main language, I mean, it's been relatively easy for us to find the right people in Chicago, obviously. I mean, you know, it's a hot language. It's a hot market, you know, fairly hot market for that. I'm actually starting to see a decrease in people coming in because it is such a hot language to know today.
Yeah.
And so the market's tightening up, I would say, a little bit, and we haven't got as good of candidates as we got in the past. But I'd like to go back to one of the topics we talked about a little while ago, and that is coming up from the young company to kind of a mature company.
Yeah.
And one of the things that's helped us a lot in the past, I would say, 4 to 5 months has been our transition from, you know, having no defined process for bug tracking and enhancement tracking and all of that to we've always used Team Foundation Server. Mm-hmm. We had that since we were, from day one. And once we've brought on our QA team and we started doing true QA in the past, I'd say 4 to 5 months, one of the things that's helped us, you know, straddle that fence is been TFS, and maybe six
a year
that we've been doing the bug tracking.
Yeah, Bruce actually started last year.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Yeah,
and we've actually used TFS since we started on the .2.0 framework because we definitely enjoy using TFS more than Visual Source Safe. You laugh.
It's
so much better.
Yeah.
But we never took advantage of work items or anything like that, or like project areas and stuff like that. We never took advantage of that. We rarely went into the SharePoint sites, you know, where they have the reporting and the graphs and all that. And that completely changed once we got our QA department going. So now we have that mechanism to track all of our tickets, and, you know, our customer support folks are using I can't remember the name of the web application, but I know that Microsoft bought it, and now
it was the old Team Prize, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's the
web front end.
Okay.
You know, it's called Team. It was called not Team Prize. They're gonna kill me. That's another company. the Mike's great TFS integration software. Yeah.
So our customer
Team Plane.
Okay.
Yeah, that was the name of it. So.
Our customer support department actually uses that front end and they write tickets right into our TFS server. And so our QA department grabs them up, and they can keep track of, you know, how many tickets are being worked and our progress. We're also using that for product enhancement requests from our clients. We're using more of a spreadsheet interface because you can export a spreadsheet to Excel and then import from the Excel.
Yeah.
So we're using that with our clients. In the future, once we migrate up to Foundation Server 2008, we're going to try to see if we can expose that externally to our clients so that we don't have to depend on the Excel worksheets. But that's still being thought about, and you know, that's kind of the direction that we're going.
So you guys have really seen the, if I could just sum up, really seen the return on investment of putting the rigor in place, right? If, you know, adopting the processes, documenting everything, you know, just having, you know, the plan, you know, visible and available to everybody so you could see, here's exactly where we stand, here's the bugs, and here's the enhancements.
Mm-hmm. And also, just to add on to it, I've read a lot of good things about project management inside of TFS 2008. I was watching some videos on Channel 9, and they were saying how good it is to use the project section of the 2008. It's been greatly improved. So that might be something that our project managers will now be able to integrate in, and they can see, you know, the results of their requests that they have made to us, how they're being fulfilled, and, you know, manage their schedule, what they tell their clients based on that.
Yeah.
What? Today they're using they're currently using the SharePoint and the Wiki features inside of the SharePoint. What SharePoint version are we running?
3.0.
So the project management team is using those features to kind of not only have that document repository, but also to have, they're using the Wiki features of it too to keep track of their conversations with their clients and stuff like that. And then one of the benefits, one of the things we use in the back room with the developers is a Wiki, and it's hugely successful for us to keep everybody on the team involved and up to speed with what's going on. And getting to the TFS piece of it, I think it not only has it helped us track the bugs and enhancement requests, but it also gives Mo and Zach, our development leads, the ability to resource allocate those bugs to their folks that are on their teams. So we use it now for them to see that stuff. Mo and Zach and I will go in a room and have that stuff in front of us and determine which items are going into a build, and then they can take it from there and go assign it to their teams. So maybe Mo can talk to that for a second.
Yeah, definitely. It helps a lot, and it helps us like see the progress that is being made. For example, if we start a big project, and we group those tickets that were being created, and we see assign those to the developers, and we can see every day what progress has been made and where we are, and it helps us to add more stuff into the build for the future release if we see that it's being completed. I mean, it's faster than we thought it would be. So it definitely helps a lot.
So to project manager, how do we get more things in as opposed to taking more stuff out? You know. So I actually want to wrap up with one last question. I want to ask all four of you guys this. So Mo, you can hang on the microphone. I'll ask you first. And that is, you know, what can Microsoft do better? And you can answer it as, you know, Microsoft in general. And by the way, Ben, this is going to be, well, I'm kind of bracing myself. Or more specifically, you know, what could we do, you know, for, you know, companies that, you know, are in the startup phase, you know, and then kind of, you know, taking the next step. What can we do better? I mean, I personally know, you know, coming, you know, from outside of Microsoft, I've only been here a year and a half, you know, of some things that I thought of when I was an enterprise architect. But I'd like to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think all the tools that Microsoft has provided for the developers, very well documentation, and the user groups that Microsoft has definitely helps. I mean, what could Microsoft do better? I would say probably go a little bit more towards like open source, so that it gives a better flexibility for the developers if they want to take it and you know, go beyond.
I would stick more to the business side and say that, you know, we basically in the Empower, the ISV program, the Empower program, that's changed over the past year or so. And I'm currently in the process of, you know, trying to figure out what the right way is to get the software we need. and what the right, you know, licensing model is for the developers we have, so it doesn't cost us an arm and a leg to do the development we need to do. And I would say that that process has been challenging for us this year, and figuring out how we keep that going. And I would like to see some changes there in just making sure that the software that's needed to, you know, put the products on the market like we do as small companies is available to us and is readily available, and that there's a direct chain into either our local chapter or, you know, Microsoft as a whole to keep that partnership program running smooth.
I guess I have two things that I would like Microsoft to change. The first was kind of touching on what you were talking about, is I would like to see Microsoft simplify their product line. There are just a lot of versions of Visual Studio and a lot of versions of Windows. I think if we simplify that a little bit more, it'd be easier on a small company like us or a growing company like us to make a better decision about what it is that we need and what versions of applications and frameworks and servers that we need to use. And the second topic would be, you know, we're not in a Microsoft-only world, so I think the tools that we have are for integrating with other platforms, they're great now, but they can definitely be better. I think if Microsoft were to say, you know, business is a very mixed environment, we need to provide tools that make developers choose Microsoft over other platforms because it's much easier, but it's compatible, and it works for other platforms, I think that would be great.
Absolutely. Again, to Todd's point, being in the Empower program has helped us greatly, you know, giving us access to products that we might not have even thought about being able to download and try and install and getting that. So I think getting startups and small businesses into these programs, getting them, you know, allowing them to have MSDN subscriptions and maybe getting them into Empower and things like that, greatly helped us, I know. And I guess one more thing that I would like to see more of, which I have seen Microsoft sort of turn into, is more of a transparency between the Microsoft as a corporate entity and sort of the developers working on the products. I mean, I remember back in the day when Microsoft.com was just, hey, you know, that's where you go. That's their website. They have some advertisements, things like that.
Yeah.
You know, there was the MSDN, which had some documentation, but now you've got things like Channel 9, you've got the MSDN blogs, all kinds of things that sort of give you transparency into this, you know, giant corporate Microsoft entity, into you know, the developers, the product teams. You know, you can actually post things to, you know, the VB form, the C# form, you know, and have those teams look at your posts and respond to that, and I think that's been just awesome. And I would definitely like to see more of that.
Yeah, it's really changed, and I think that's a general direction. You know, for the listeners, we'll actually, you know, post some information on the show notes about the Empower program, because most people may not be aware of it. I think it's called StartupZone.com. You know, this year, as Todd said, you know, it's gone through, you know, some changes. All that's been based on feedback from our customers. So we'll post that up there. But I want to thank you guys for being on the Thirsty Developer and for having us down to your offices today. I had a blast.
Definitely, thank you.
So Larry, that was a really interesting interview. And actually, you know, the funny thing is that, you know, when you first introduced us as that you're going to be talking to a startup company, you know, when I hear the word startup, I immediately think of, you know, startup that, you know, they come up with a name and kind of leave the last vowel off of the name, like a Flickr or something like that. Or, you know, when you think of startup, you kind of think of the next sort of web kind of company coming up with the next social networking site that's going to blow away the world, right? So when you say startup, you don't necessarily think of a company like Canopy Financial.
Yeah, they've you know, a little different style there. I mean, they're going after a new business area because HSAs have only launched a few years ago. So there was really a market niche for them to, you know, jump into, and they're using the latest advanced technology. You know, they're doing, you know, Ajax style interfaces, and they're doing you know, they're looking at some Silverlight potentially. But it's definitely, it's not what you think of as a startup, but they are definitely a startup company. You know, I think I mentioned in the interview that they don't have carpet in their development area. You know, it's just the bare, right, the bare concrete, and they don't have cubes up, because, you know, they don't want to spend the money on those kind of frills, you know, until they get the business completely established.
Right, exactly. And you know, so what I actually, you know, like I said, I was at KDP Financial a few weeks ago when we met with them and had lunch with them and stuff and we saw their offices. And, you know, the first thing I noticed is, you know, they have, you know, the regular office chairs with the rollers on them, and then they have this concrete floor and they kind of this wide open space. And my first question to them was, okay, what kind of chair hockey games are you guys playing during the day? Because you can get really zipping across those concrete floors with those chairs.
Yeah. And they seem like they have a lot of fun. I think we mentioned the Rock Band drum sets, you know, during the interview, but, you know, you can tell that they work hard and play hard there. Good bunch of guys.
Oh, absolutely.
So one of the things that they mentioned in the interview was, you know, the Empower program. And I said during the interview that we'd put a little more information on the blog. But I think we ought to go ahead and talk about it a little bit, Dave.
As an evangelist, you know, for Microsoft, I've heard about the Empower program. I was never quite aware exactly, you know, what the Empower program was.
So the Empower program, and actually it's just kind of one of the offerings that we have. We have a great website called MicrosoftStartupZone.com, and again, we'll put a link in the you know, on the blog for, you know, for the show notes. But there's a number of different programs available to people, you know, who are starting out to kind of bootstrap them with some Microsoft software to get things going. Empower used to be kind of a standalone program, but now it's actually under the Microsoft Startup Zone. And what Empower lets you do is, for the first couple of years, it gives you licenses, I think, for Windows, SQL Server, but also like 5 copies of the MSDN licenses to kind of get your developers, you know, up and running. It's not all the software that you need, you know, to run your business, because I think it's basically the, you know, the MSDN style licenses, which for the development only. You still need to have production servers and things like that. But it's a great way to kind of, you know, to kind of get you going without having to worry about that software cost. Also there, they've got information about how to become a Microsoft partner, which is another way of getting, you know, some software to get your business going.
Yeah, so the Microsoft Startup Zone site is actually, it's a great opportunity for these businesses, like you said, to get their feet off the ground and get their businesses up and running. And one of the actually, you know, the kind of things I was poking around the site and I saw is under their blog section, there's a particular blog by Daniel Lewin, where he has actually a number of different videos that have been posted. It was kind of more of an interview series that one of the startup companies that Daniel works with, they did some kind of video capture interviews, just kind of walking through the process of how does a startup company work with Microsoft and what is the program about and how do they get up and running. So definitely check that out, MicrosoftStartupZone.com. It's definitely an interesting resource for those startup companies out there.
So speaking of blogs, Dave, should we go into the blog you should know?
That's a great transition, Larry. Let's move into blogs you should know. Why don't you kick it off this week?
So I went with our pal Jeff Mauser down in Indianapolis. He's got a blog at mauserware.com, and that's MOSERWARE.com. And Jeff's got a little different kind of a, you know, flavor to his blog. I think Jeff, you know, and I haven't actually asked him this, but I would suspect that he's a bit of a history nut. Because he's actually got some blog posts out there about how he visited a computer museum and they had like VIC-20s and things like that. But he recently published this great 3-part series on the effect of Moore's Law, you know, kind of on programming and computers in general. And very insightful blog, you know, very kind of deep thoughts kind of thing. And I would definitely, if you're looking for that style of blog, I would definitely go check that out.
Now, was that the Computer History Museum out in San Jose that he was talking about?
Yes, sir. He visited there. He has pictures of himself with some of the, you know, early computer recorders that were the size of trucks.
Yeah, so actually, I've always wanted to go there, and I've never had an opportunity to do so, but I've heard from numerous people that it's just an outstanding facility and a great place to go, you know, especially for, you know, people in the technology industry, just to kind of go and see, you know, where the industry began and kind of the transition that it's gone through over the past, you know, say 40, 50 years, you know, where it started and where we are today. It's kind of a very interesting story to tell, and you can actually see it as part of that computer museum. So if you ever get a chance to go to San Jose, California, definitely you know, go check out the Computer History Museum. So with that, I guess it's my turn for a blog you should know.
What do you got?
And actually, here's the funny thing, right? Chances are everybody already knows this blog. The funny thing is I wasn't aware of this blog. This is actually Sarah Ford's blog on MSDN, so blogs.msdn.com/Sarah Ford. And the interesting thing about Sarah's blog is, believe it or not, she is the number one blog on blogs.msdn.com. And one of the reasons she has the number one blog on MSDN is because she does a Visual Studio tip of the day. And I was actually not aware of this particular blog, and everybody, I think besides myself, knows about this blog. So this is more of a blog that Dave should know, I guess. But she does a Visual Studio tip of the day, which is a very popular topic. Sarah was actually part of the testing team for Visual Studio, so I guess she has just a stack of different test cases that she's run through over the years, and she essentially takes, you know, kind of tips that she's learned through her role as a tester for Visual Studio, and just shares that information on her blog for the Visual Studio tip of the day. She's no longer a tester on the Visual Studio team. I actually think she's part of the Codeplex team now, but definitely check her out. That's Sarah Ford, blogs.msdn.com/Sarah Ford.
Cool, Dave.
So with that, you know, before we close out this week's show, Larry, there's kind of one thing that there's still one order of business that we have to do.
And what is that, Dave?
So, you know, a number of episodes ago, I don't even know what episode it was at this point in time, but we actually gave away a Zune to one of our listeners. And, you know, the interesting thing about this particular Zune, it's not any regular Zune, but it's a Zune 80 that's customized with some, you know, one of the custom artworks from the Zune Originals website, and a little kind of message from the Thirsty Developer on the back of it. So we have one of those to give away, and it's kind of interesting. You know, what are we going to do? How are we going to give that Zune away this week?
Well, in the interview, Dave, I asked the guys from Canopy, you know, I asked, you know, all four of them to answer the question, what could Microsoft do better? And I kind of, you know, slanted it towards startups. But I think it would be kind of neat to ask our audience right now, and we've got over 1,000 subscribers to our feed, and you know, a lot more people who just kind of download an episode here and there. Like to ask them, you know, what do they think? You know, what could Microsoft do better? And you don't have to limit it to a startup, because a lot of the guys out there listening, you know, don't necessarily work, you know, with the startup technologies. But you know, let's just ask them, and then we'll just like randomly draw one of the responses that we get. How does that sound?
I think that's a great idea. I mean, part of our jobs as evangelists, I mean, it is our jobs to kind of work with our technology communities and kind of, you know, work with them to kind of ask the question, you know, what is Microsoft doing right? What are we doing wrong? What can we do better? How can we solve your problems and make your lives easier utilizing our technologies? And, you know, kind of, you know, just making sure that the customers are satisfied, right? So that's one of our primary jobs as evangelists. So we ask that question, you know, a number of times in various forms, and I think this is a great opportunity to kind of just poll our listeners and ask them, you know, what is Microsoft doing right? What are we doing wrong? What can we do better? So send us, you know, kind of your comments. You know, you don't need to go into any sort of long essay. It could be just a few sentences. It doesn't matter. And, you know, please make it as constructive a feedback as possible. But yeah. we'll take essentially you know, some of the best responses and maybe draw from those responses. So send those to thirstydeveloper@live.com and give it the subject header of Zune contest. And we'll draw from our.
We'll run this for a week or two or what? How long should we run this for?
So let's. Why don't we say episode 23? We'll do a drawing on episode 23. So we'll give you 2 weeks to kind of submit your kind of comments. And once again, send those to thirstydeveloper@live.com with the subject heading of Zune contest, and provide us some feedback of what Microsoft could do better to support in what you do in utilizing our technologies. And we'll have the drawing on episode 23.
And maybe we'll talk about some of the responses that we got. If we saw the same thing a lot of times, maybe we'll talk about that one. Or if there's a particular problem, you know, maybe we'll get somebody from the product team to kind of respond to what the problem is. You know,
right?
We'll figure something out. Responses, yeah.
And, you know, actually, what would be kind of cool is if there's a way that we could figure out taking some of the key responses that we get back and maybe invite them to join the show and kind of share that feedback with us. And maybe if we can get some people from the product teams to kind of contribute to that as well. I mean, that's kind of a logistical nightmare to get that hooked up, but we'll see what we can do, because I think that'd make for an interesting show, to say the least.
Yeah, at the very least, we'll make sure somebody gets a Zune.
That's right. That's the most important thing, right? So, yeah, we'll definitely be giving that away. You know, once again, it's a brand new Zune 80 with some, you know, custom artwork etched on the back and a nice little message from Thirsty Developer. And we'll be drawing for that in 2 weeks. So episode 23, we'll announce the winners. So with that, I think we'll close out this week's episode. Once again, I invite each and every one of you to visit thirstydeveloper.com, provide your feedbacks for the show. And if you have any suggestions or comments about future show topics, you can send those to us at thirstydeveloper@live.com. And of course, you know, both Larry and I, we have blogs. You can reach me at daveboss.com and you can reach Larry at larryclarkin.com. But actually where you'll see us most is on twitter.com. So you can reach me at twitter.com/daveboss. And Larry, how can we get you on Twitter?
Twitter.com/LarryClarkin.
And that's where you'll see us. So with that, folks, we'll catch you next week. And with that, we stop. Try it again.